a perspective on the Sport Pilot Certificate from one of the guys who administers check rides. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome in to today's Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. I have two guests on the line. One is managing editor Rob Finfrock of Aero News, who we've talked to before and our listeners know well. The other is Wayne Willette, who is talking to us from Maine, from an airport. Wayne is a designated pilot examiner and was the guy who turned Rob Finfrock loose to threaten the skies for the rest of us. Rob became a sport pilot recently, and Wayne administered the check ride. We have talked on Aero News about sport pilot from the standpoint of students and from the standpoint of manufacturers and even from the standpoint of instructors at times, but never from the standpoint of a designated pilot examiner. And we wanted to talk to Wayne a little bit today about what is different about sport pilot and how he approaches his job. First of all, Wayne, thanks for joining us today. Let me start out by asking you how you got into the business of being a designated pilot examiner in the first place.
Well, I started flying back in 65, and I've been a CFI since 1969. And I had a problem. I was working at a paper mill and kind of broke my neck, and I had to give up flying for a while. And I thought the only way that I could get back into flying was when the ultralights came out. And it all looked good to me that it was a prospect of possibly trying to get my CFI equivalent without having to have a medical. And I started looking into it, got into the ultralights, and now the light sport, and still doing general aviation. And that's what got me to where I am today.
So when you became an ultralight instructor, did you do that under the auspices of ASC or one of the other organizations, or how did that work?
Yeah, I was affiliated with EAA, USUA, ASC, and the only time that I actually got affiliated with AFS 610 was, that's the light sport branch. It was when I was accepted to go out to Oklahoma and get my schooling done and become a DPE there. And now I do work full-time under them, under the guise of DPE for AFS and on my own for CFI.
All right. Now, when you made the change from ultralight to sport pilot, did that coincide with the demise of the so-called fat ultralight? In other words, was it the regulatory change that affected your timing, or were you kind of looking to something like this further ahead?
No, I just, being at my age set, a lot of the young guys that are coming up as CFIs did not want to get into teaching anything, and they sure didn't want to jump from general aviation down to, at that time, fat ultralights. They were kind of afraid of them. They were kind of afraid of the students that they had, and I never wanted to fly jets or whatever, and I figured this would get some of these guys down there to get a handle on what they wanted to do, and I understood where they were. And kind of glad that I did, because I did fly under the exempt rule with a Challenger amphib and worked my way right back up through. So I've got a commercial instrument and everything, and still got all of the, you know, the fundamentals for light sport right straight up through from the ultralights.
All right, let me ask you about light sport aircraft, because there has been some controversy surrounding them regarding whether they're the best aircraft for a beginning student without crosswind experience or a lot of landings to be turned loose in, especially given the fact that the sport pilot license can be earned with fewer hours than a traditional private pilot certificate. How have you found the crop of light sport aircraft, and how have you found the preparation of the people who have come to you for check rides so far? Are they up to snuff?
A little hesitant when we first started with the actual farm flyers that wanted to stick around with just ultralights, didn't want to give up any, they didn't want to have any more knowledge, and I thought it was going to be a big fall down, but overall, I mean, I'm getting a lot of guys in their 60s that are coming down that haven't flown general aviation for a long time and gotten into that, but that being said, the guys that come to me, once they get into the books, they turn out to be excellent, excellent pilots, because you have to fly a light sport in comparison to what you would with a Cessna 172 or 150, they're fairly forgiven, but the light sport, you have to fly them every minute. And when they get done, they're pretty accomplished. Even, you know, in the winds and whatever, they're very accomplished. I haven't run into too many problems. I've only had two failures as far as giving my exams out. And, I mean, it shows for itself.
All right. Now, tell us a little bit about the demographics of the students that you see coming through for check rides. You mentioned mostly older guys. Is that the way light sport is going, at least in your part of the country? Is it proving to be more of an avenue for people who have let their medicals lapse than it is for young people who are buying low-end airplanes?
No, I don't see it that way. If anything, on the backside of it was when the guys that of 60s or so that just don't want to mess around with a medical, they just don't take any more than one other person, and everything falls in place for them. But you're starting to get a lot of young guys, and I find it down in Florida because I'm down there half of the year. I'm a snowbird, and a lot of guys are going, older people are going to the trikes and the powered parachutes, and a lot of the younger guys are seriously getting into the fixed wing part of the light sport. You know, we was talking about the time frame. It's all good to say that you got 20 hours that you've got to have to get a light sport, but on the other hand, you know, you're not going to find too many people that are going to get into it in 20 hours. It's going to be the average from what I see right now is 35 hours. But on the other hand, if you look at general aviation, 40 hours, 35 through an approved school, that you're still 70 hours. So everything's gone up because of the knowledge that you have to have about aviation.
Wayne Ouellette is a designated pilot examiner for Sport Pilot. He's based in Maine and in the winter in Florida. And we'll be back with more in a moment. I'm Paul Plack. You're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
You hear that sound? It's one of the all-time great inventions. Takes lids off cans just like that. But now, let's picture something even bigger. A tool that can take the lid off a whole airport. Actually, thousands of airports. It's a Garmin WAAS GPS. Lets you make glide path approaches using runways that were once closed tight during IFR conditions. Hey, if you're gonna fly in the soup, you gotta have an opener. Garmin WAAS GPS. Follow the leader.
Diamond's DA-42 Twin Star is general aviation's ultimate flying machine. Fly fast with the confidence of a twin for the cost of a single. Go direct over water or rugged terrain and cover great distances in the first and only piston aircraft with an advanced airframe, avionics, and engines. The DA-42 gives you options you've never had before, including the Garmin G1000 and no ice protection. Go where you want, when you want, fast and for less. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design for a number of reasons. Clarity Aloft headsets are known for the superior clarity of sound. They're lightweight but rugged enough to meet military specifications. Best of all, they boast better noise reduction than ANR in the speech frequencies that matter most to you. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
Welcome back to this Aero News special feature. I'm Paul Plack, talking today with Wayne Ouellette, designated pilot examiner for Sport Pilot. Let's talk about one of these younger guys who came your way, and that's ANN managing editor Rob Finfrock. Rob, how did you wind up going to Wayne for a check ride after your instruction as a sport pilot candidate?
Sort of just a happy set of coincidence and circumstances, Paul. I was down there late part of March, beginning part of April, just before Sun and Fun, finally pushing through to get my sport pilot rating. And the instructor who had been set up for me ahead of my trip, a gentleman by the name of Jim Crone, has worked with Wayne a number of times and has sent a number of students to Wayne. And from the start, Jim had tried to do his best to prepare me for the so-called Wayne from Maine experience, and I say that with a grin because it was definitely made clear to me by Jim, and then upon meeting Wayne, here was a gentleman who has been in aviation for a while, has seen, if not, well, there's no pilot out there who's seen it all. Wayne has definitely seen more than a lot of them, I would say, and especially as an examiner, but it was also instilled to me that Wayne had a somewhat different approach to exams, not necessarily any different from, as far, you know, definitely not any different as far as the nuts and bolts go and the need to ascertain the level of knowledge that a potential pilot applicant has, But as far as presenting the exam and as far as making it clear that even when a student is taking the oral exam, even when he or she is taking the check ride, that is still a learning experience. And that's something that, of course, I approached. I first met Wayne when we did the oral exam back on April 3rd. And I obviously went into that not knowing what to expect. I was nervous slash scared, as Wayne can attest to. he saw it in me. But it very quickly became clear to me that this wasn't a guy who was looking to set me up. He wasn't looking for a gotcha scenario. If there was something that I wasn't exactly sure on, so long as it didn't compromise safety at all, and it, as long as I didn't show myself to be completely without any knowledge of the subject whatsoever, he wasn't looking for, aha, here's a chance for me to fail this student. He was looking for me to learn, and that was an extremely beneficial experience going through both the oral exam and then a week later on the check ride.
Wayne, let me ask you, is it more common to have a student come to you for a check ride through a relationship that you have with an instructor, or do they just find you on the internet or out of the phone book?
Well, most of them, once I set up with a CFI, I more or less work with him. He brings his students to me. I've got a couple dozen CFIs I work with in Maine and in Florida. And if I'm not down in Florida, they'll find somebody. But usually I take one or two trips down there. And excuse the background noise. I take trips down to Florida, go to West Virginia, and try to finish people up. So it's mainly from CFIs. I get a few calls, people chasing me around, but they're always trying to find the CFI first anyway.
Is there a problem when a CFI is too closely connected with a designated pilot examiner? And I don't say this with any kind of allegation of wrongdoing. It's just that in my experience coming up as a private pilot through the Part 61 process, looking back on it, it almost seemed like there was an effort on the part of the flight instructors to recommend a DPE who they had kind of figured out. They wanted to make sure they could prepare me not only for the practical test standards, but for some of the more interesting things that might be thrown at me during a check ride, for some of the alternate airports that might come up, and all that sort of thing. Is that common, and is that a good practice?
Well, the big thing is with me is, I guess it's my age probably, but you're not going to catch me. I've got, everybody is an individual. I don't have certain criteria for the people that come along that I pull a book out and say, okay, this test is for this guy because he's 6'1", this guy is 5'8". This is, you know, it's what I sit down in the first three or four questions I ask somebody. I do it on a scenario base. Rob will tell you the same thing. I'll probably talk to you for 5 minutes, get 20 questions asked, answered, and you don't even know I asked a question.
So very true.
My flight instructors, I do not let them ever sit down with me, so everybody is an individual. They can talk to them afterwards, but the next student that they get that comes through and back to them, they'll find a whole set of new set of issues.
All right, Rob, let me ask you, because I've heard scenario-based used as an expression to describe instruction. In what way was your check ride scenario-based?
You know, obviously, we're going up in the plane, and the purpose of the check ride was actually to go somewhere. We went up to Zephyr Hills, flying out of South Lakeland Airport. Wayne had me plot a course. He had me, it was an interesting scenario, because we were somewhat under the gun, because this was fairly, mid to late evening, a couple hours of sunlight left. Wayne had flown down to South Lakeland in order to administer my check ride. We were somewhat under pressure because of a limited time frame, and it was interesting that he let me know that, you know, I mean, it wasn't pressure. He wasn't standing over me as I was plotting my course, but at the same time, he was presenting that as, this is a scenario that you will experience as a pilot. You have to quickly determine your course, determine where you're going to go. South Lakeland presented a unique challenge because we were flying while the TFR for Sun and Fun was in effect, so that was a swath of airspace that we had to, I had to fly west and then turn north to go to Zephyr Hills, as opposed to flying a direct shot northwest. That's a good example of scenario training. If I can step back just a little bit to the oral exam, and what we were mentioning as far as an examiner trying to prepare a student. Let me be very clear. I did not go into that exam knowing exactly what Wayne was going to ask me, and it was very clear from the beginning that not only was I being tested, but even for as many years as Wayne has known Jim, that he was a little tested too. One of the first things Wayne said was, okay, well, Jim, if you go on over to the FBO on the field at Brooksville and wait there for a couple hours, hopefully you won't see us sooner than then, because if we walk over there any sooner than a couple hours, it will mean that you, Jim, haven't done your job in preparing your student. So, one last thought on scenario-based training, Paul, and this is something that struck me first after the oral exam and then a couple days after the check ride, because I was on such a euphoric high from the check ride that I really didn't think of the actual process. I was just thinking of the fact that I passed, I'm a pilot.
Uh-huh.
Wayne has a very interesting style on presenting questions to the student before him, and he's already touched on this. There's a bit of a Columbo element to it, and the 70s television detective who was known for his trench coat, Wayne doesn't wear a trench coat, but also for his manner of engaging the person he's talking with in conversation and making them feel a little bit at ease, making them feel a little bit more relaxed. And then you realize, wait, I've just answered a question that he was asking, and he is absolutely masterful at doing that. In that we took three breaks throughout the 2-hour exam, and it was like 2 hours and 15 minutes. And in those breaks, at the end of each of them, when he was asking me why did I want to be a pilot, what brought me into aviation, things like that, he'd smile at the end of it and said, you realize you just answered my question on this subject or this particular manner, things like that. I found that a very approachable style. I didn't feel at any moment that I was up on a stand being grilled by a prosecutor during my exam and even during my check ride. Again, it all ties into making the examination process not only an assertion of your proficiency as a pilot and your knowledge of things that you need to be a pilot, but also as a learning experience. And I have very limited experience before an examiner. Wayne is the only one I've ever dealt with, but I must say it is he made the process very interesting, and I think it's a benefit to general aviation if more examiners adopt a similar manner to that and not just be a harsh attorney, prosecutor.
Right.
So I must say to him, very well done, and thank you very much, Wayne, for everything that you did for me.
Well, Rob, thanks for taking a few minutes out today, and congratulations on being a sport pilot.
Well, thank you, Paul. It's still a great feeling.
Wayne, let me ask you in closing, what airport in Maine are you based from, and what part of the year are you normally there?
Well, I'm in Pittsfield, Maine. It's probably 15 miles from Bangor, Maine. People know Bangor pretty much when they come to Maine. I'm up here. I come from Florida usually the 1st of May and go back to Florida the 1st of December. But I also travel around. People have to do if they want to get in touch with me. And they've got 3 or 4 students lined up and want to pay my expenses to get me there. This is how we work it.
Well, Wayne, thanks very much for giving us some insight into how it works to be a designated pilot examiner in the light sport world, and have a great summer.
Thank you, Paul.
You can reach Wayne on his cell phone anytime, no matter what part of the country he's in, at area code 207-341-7898. And you'll find that number posted as well on the data block that accompanies this Aerocast. My guests have been Wayne Ouellette, who is a designated pilot examiner for Sport Pilot based in Maine, and Rob Finfrock is ANN's managing editor. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.